agenda.
Does this thing is off here?
I prefer the name of Oana Blanco to be the acting chairperson of the day.
Do we have any further?
I second the proposal.
Do we have any further nominations? Any further nominations? Mr. Rancho is now the acting chairperson for the day. He can proceed and take the
you all in this meeting and apologize for the starting late of the meeting. That's because this time of the year, the NCOP members, they're very, very, very busy. The committees are up and about trying to wrap up the year so that when we go on island or in we have done all the work that is expected from us. And as you know, the NCOP is formed up with few members. So the members are in some few committees. You are not a member of one or two committees. You are a member of 12 committees sometimes, some of us, and some 8 and some 7. No, I think it's not less than 7 the committees that we are involved in as a person. So my apologies for starting late. As we have already heard that the chairperson is also not with us, I think we will work together today and come up with resolutions and decisions that will develop our country. I assume we know each other. I assume so. We don't know. Let me start by introducing myself and the members will follow after that. The DDG or the Basic Education Department will introduce themselves. I'm Kiswa Ranto from the Eastern Cape. I'm a member of this committee, acting chairperson today.
Morning. My name is Sipho Plaki. I'm from the Northwest Block.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Michael Devaliers. I'm from the Western Cape.
Good morning. My name is Willem Faber, and I represent the Northern Cape Province.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and good morning to the members of the committee. I'm Perry Pagliacci, I'm acting DG, while the Director General, Mr. Brown, is attending the committee. The colleagues from the department will introduce themselves. We'll start with my left.
Good morning, my name is Mr. Tom Lelo, CFO of the department.
Good
morning, I'm Devin Carlos, I'm DDG for City Planning and Security.
Good morning, my name is Karis Tissier, I'm Director of City Planning and Security. I'm Tosh Kuman from the Department of Basic Education. Tema Bozano from the Department of Basic Education. Matanzi Mamueli, acting DDG Karagia.
Good morning, I'm Marie Louise Samuel from the curriculum branch.
Good morning, I'm Simone Gaya, I'm the director for education and medical community.
Good morning, I'm Lisa Mirandi from the
I'm Rani Falun Yasser, the Parliamentary Liaison Officer of the Ministry of Education.
Okay, thank you. We all don't know each other now. Before we start with the meeting, I've already done the opening and the welcoming. The apologies.
An apology from the chairperson of the committee. Should have taken it. The apology from the honorable minister, the city minister, and the director general from the stage.
I was missing Mr. Superbrain. I was saying Mr. Superbrain. Mr. Superbrain, I was just saying, I was mispronouncing it. I was missing it.
Before the department can give us the briefing, let me make just one comment. In listening to the department as you introduce yourself, for the acting DDG here, where the DDG is not here, means he has his apologies. The minister is not here, the deputy minister is not here. DDG, I just want you to convey this message from the NCOP Select Committee of Education. Ever since we started being members of this committee in 2009, we've never seen the minister in the, as part of us in this committee. And we had a feeling this morning when we said that it's only you who are here to cancel this meeting until the minister has time to come and present us with the information. I'm not sure members, what resolution have you taken on that? I'm giving it over to you. Do we continue with this meeting, or are we to wait for that moment that the minister comes and present herself to us?
Honorable Nassamen. Now, thanks, Acting Chairperson. I think I agree with your sentiment. It's the sentiment that shared by the whole committee. However, I'm not sure whether you didn't receive or you are just apologizing on their behalf. Maybe they've forgotten to put an apology for the minister and the deputy and for the DG. However, in line with maximizing what we have, I think it should be the last meeting that we are having it without the ministry. Thank you.
Honorable Gosamai. There is a sabotage
this morning.
No, there is a sabotage.
Yeah,
particularly in the Sunday.
No, just.
Sir, first and foremost, I must express my view to say
I'm very much disappointed. We are politicians, and we want to hear from our counterparts and some of them. And I share the very same sentiments that usually if politicians are not there, the DG is not there. We have to send you back. I am saying this, but having concern that you are coming here without the political head of the department will be a wasteful and secretive position. You come all the way from county head office. We have used a lot of money to come here. And that is my concern, Honorable Chair. That we are going back, which is a wasteful and fruitless expenditure.
Honorable Cabinet?
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I want to share the same sentiment with my colleagues. But that sometimes it's good to hear from the minister about the issues of the department. At least we have been meeting with the management from time to time. They are consistent, we appreciate that. But really, having the politician, even if it's a deputy minister, it is good to listen from them. What are the issues of the department? And also the responses should be given immediately. Sometimes there are questions that the management cannot answer to. I remember at one stage, one of the members posed a question that wouldn't be responded to. But if the politician is there, it is easy for us to communicate freely with the minister and also build a rapport between the committee and the department. It's very, very important. So I just want to emphasize that we really, really plead with the minister that even if she can come, just stay for 30 minutes or 45 minutes and just to introduce the issues and leave, we will appreciate that. So sending them back, Chairperson, we'll be shooting ourselves on the foot at the same time because we'll be denying ourselves an important information that we have interacted with. So I request that they must provide.
Yes, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I do believe that my colleagues are correct in a way, but I am always a controversial one, and maybe it sounds that I'm controversial, but it's not. The thing is, if you don't make a statement, it will happen all and all over again. Our minister has neglected this committee since we started here. We've asked on numerous occasions for the minister to attend. It's fallen on deaf ears. Now, I mean, the minister's got a responsibility towards this committee as well. Why do the select committee never see the minister? I mean, we do see the ministers of the other departments. So what makes the minister of education so much more important not to come to this meeting than the other ministers? And I do believe we must make a statement. By just saying, listen here, this is unacceptable, and we'll wait for the minister. And if the minister thinks it's important enough to come and see us to present this to us, then make an appointment with us. Because I really believe, I understand of the wasteful expenditure that my colleagues speak about. But I really do have a problem that if we go on this way by saying, please next time be here, please next time be here, we've been doing this for the last 2 years. How many times must we still ask the minister to come as the political head of this department to come and explain certain things to us? The officials can't explain everything, and sometimes it's difficult for an official to make a certain statement, which when we ask questions, they can't reply on some things because there are also some political pressures on some of these questions, and the minister can sometimes try and explain some of these things to us. But I understand that it's difficult for officials sometimes to answer some of the questions which might not be of administrative type of questions, and I really do believe we've been undermined actually by the ministry. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks, honourable members. So we are all of the same sentiment, and we also, all of us, we agree that we continue today for the last time without the minister.
Yeah.
No problem.
So let us continue giving over to the Department of Basic Education to give us the annual report. Thanks.
Can I raise this person so that it does not continue next time? That can the ministry write an apology to us? Then, yeah, thanks. Explain and write an apology to us.
Sorry, Madam Chair, there is a formal apology that was addressed to you yesterday, and the minister is at the UNESCO conference in Paris, and it is for that reason why she's not here.
We understand that, Mr. Randall, but it's been happening for the past 2.5 years. Her absence has been felt now too much. Thank you. The department, I'm giving over now to the department.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think, Mr. Fanden, what we have heard the sentiments of the committee. We will convey that to the minister, and the request of the committee to, in addition to the apology that's given, we will put a letter to the committee explaining the circumstances for the absence of the Director General and the minister and the Deputy Minister. And we will emphasize to the minister to appear before the committee at another opportunity. So thank you, Honorable Chair. We will go into the presentation, and I will start off with a background and context to the annual report, and then thereafter my colleagues, Ms. Kailser and Mr. Kutsia, and the CFO, Ms. Molilekwa, will share the presentation. So just to give an understanding of the report, the DBE has a statutory role, which is twofold, to look at formulating policy and norms and standards. And the second role is to monitor and evaluate policy, in particular its implementation and its impact. What we've found in terms of when analyzing the system, it becomes clear that DBE needs to perform more active steering role and provide a direct role in supporting implementation. We do have various mechanisms to do this, from fiscal measures using conditional grants and looking at a stronger monitoring and evaluation by DB itself, as well as National Treasury and the Auditor General. So this is to look at clearly signaling the priorities that we need to achieve. And in the period that we are reporting on, 2010-11, we introduced the action plan to 2014, which was the first time ever that we had a sector plan in order to ensure that we have a more robust involvement when trying to direct the system. Now, the action plan to 2014 sets out the measurable and time-bound targets, not just for DBE itself, but for the entire basic education sector. And provincial departments have also developed activities and have set targets in terms of their own particular conditions. And DBE monitors these plans and supports the improvement. And DBE itself implements activities to ensure that key priorities are addressed. And we're looking at the workbooks, the annual national assessment, the curriculum changes, the CAPS, the CD, which is infrastructure, teacher development, and looking at learner performance improvement. We're further refining policies to align it with the action plan in order to ensure there's accountability. And the department has initiated the creation of a responsive institutional mechanism, which the minister in a budget speech spoke about in terms of the planning and delivery oversight unit. Now, just to give the context in which we are working in, since 2002, the percentage of five-year-olds attending education institutions have over time moved from approximately 40% to over 78%. This is key in terms of the outputs that need to be delivered in terms of ETD and grade R in particular. The percentage of 16 to 18-year-olds in this period has ranged between 82 and 85% in that while these 16 to 18-year-olds are in institutions, the issue is where are the others that are not. Language of learning and teaching the laws and learning in your mother tongue still remains an issue. And in this slide, you'd see that in the foundation phase, amongst the official languages, there's a spread that we cover.
Sorry, my friend. Yeah, disturbing the members. I'm expecting the members to listen to what the DDG is saying, so please don't disturb the members. Give them this thing some other time.
Yes.
Continue, DDG.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. So, at the foundation level, the child is able to learn in their mother tongue, but when they reach grade 4, you find that the transition then is that you find English, the majority of learners have to change over into English, which would stand at about 81.7%. And some of the poor performance of our learners is attributed to this changeover. And you will see when the department itself is looking at addressing this issue. A issue confronting the sector is in terms of class sizes, that we have over 8,000 public schools that have class sizes that are above the norm of 40. And these slides indicate those figures for those that are between 40 and there are even those that are above 60. In our annual school survey report, we provide information on pregnancies, which stands at an average 50,000 learners in 2008 and in 9. In the system itself, over 2 million of our learners are orphans, either a single or a double, there's no parents at all. Over 10,600 learners passed away in 2008. Of the over 11 million learners, 3 million of those learners are beneficiaries of social grants, approximately 23%. And in terms of school fees, over 13 billion is collected. 8 billion in itself in the public schools that's spent on school fees. And this report also provides information by learners by population group as well as enrollment in subjects in particular for grades 10, 11, and 12. In our macro indicator report, we have findings, we've covered the 5-year-olds. We have basically excess of almost 99% of 7 to 15-year-olds who are attending education institutions. For 16-year-olds in particular, there's over 93% of learners that are in an institution as such. And it then drops for 17-year-olds to 85%. And what we need to point out is that of the 72% of 18-year-olds that attend an institution, there are 28% that do not. And of those that do not attend, 27% have completed grade 12. So those that have completed are basically not going on to further studies. In terms of efficiency, this graph outlines the dropouts, which from grades 1 to 7 and 8 is generally low by international standards. But then there's a sharp increase of dropouts, which there are a variety of reasons for, at grade 9, 10, and 11, and it also also increases at grade 12. In the transition from grade 11 to 12. This slide just indicates that over the years, we've had a grade 12 pass rate that has gone up and also gone down, and that it has been in the decline from 2003 to 2009, and it's the 2010 one that has taken us up towards the 70% mark. While the number of learners writing have also been fluctuating, and in this particular year, it's also been as dropped. In terms of the finance, the sector has received funding that has increased in terms of real terms, but in terms of the nominal increases, we've fallen behind. While the sector receives the majority share of the budget, at the end of the day, the nominal increases haven't kept up with what has actually gone on in terms of inflation and other factors that the sector is faced with. This slide, the last on the grade R, shows that while we've increased the access to grade R, the funding has also increased, and in particular over the last 3 years, it has risen quite dramatically. So there is emphasis for us to ensure that we do reach the targets for universal grade R by the stipulated time period. So now, Chair, I'll hand over to my colleagues to focus on the report itself.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just waiting for us to call up that particular presentation. We will share the presentation in the following way. In dealing with the particular outline, in the first part, we will deal with the background to the annual report within its organizational and budgetary context. In the second part, we will look specifically at the program performance and the progress of the Department of Basic Education in executing its 2010-11 operational plan. And in the final part, we will hand over to the CFO to speak to the annual financial statements as they appear in the annual report. In terms of the background, we are all familiar that this is the first annual report of the Department of Basic Education in its independent form. The last report which we presented was a shared report, because at the time of the split of the DOE, both the Department of Higher Education and Basic Education presented jointly to both the portfolio committees and to the select committee in the last annual report cycle. The functions of this particular department of the Department of Basic of Education were split. Those functions were allocated in terms of its mandate to the Department of Basic Education for schooling and to higher education and training in April 2010, which is at the start of this reporting cycle. One of the critical features of this particular report focuses also, or has to acknowledge, the outstanding balance on the books of the Department of Education, which amount to $119 million. This particular portion, which is applicable to the DBE, will be transferred to the books of the DBE during the 2011-12 financial year. And when we are asked to present on further detail to that, one of my colleagues will do so at a later stage during the question and answer session. During this reporting period as well, the Department of Basic Education relocated to new premises in the new building, which is the product of the private-public partnership. And we took occupation of that building in February 2010. During this period also, what signaled and what signified as a particular challenge to the Department of Basic Education was the protracted public sector strike action. But it also saw the department rise to the occasion, I think, in very significant ways in beginning to pull together, both collectively across provinces and also at the national level, the intervention strategies to remedy the effects of that strike action, which I think were expressed during the improved matric results at the end of the year in terms of that intervention. We also saw during this particular reporting period the extended school holidays, which were planned in support of South Africa hosting the FIFA World Cup in 2010. To go on to our program performance, I will share this part of the presentation with my colleague, Mr. Kassir. But here we focus specifically on the progress of the department in executing our 2010-11 operational plan. In terms of our significant events and achievement in this period, during this 2010-11 period, we published the long-term education sector plan. I think by now it's very familiar to most people. that we, in a sense, led the sector in developing an action plan to 2014 and towards realization of schooling 2025. The DG has, on previous occasions, I think, already reported on the details of that sector plan at its various stages of development. This particular sector plan paves the way for the sector developing a common vision to involve all of the critical stakeholders within the education sector and led by the national department and its provinces in delivering on the intentions and objectives of that action plan. The plan was very widely welcomed within the education sector because it provides very clear targets and indicators in our view, which will form the basis of both provincial and national strategic plans and annual performance plans. During this cycle, we also saw the production of the first annual performance plan by the National Department of Education, whereas this has already been common practice for a number of years already within the provincial education departments. The action plan provides a framework for the Basic Education Delivery Agreement, which is linked to government's first outcome and the apex priority of improvement for improved quality of basic education. And this particular delivery agreement was signed on the 29th of October in 2010 by the Minister of Basic Education and the 9 provincial members of Executive Councils for Education. It's during this particular period also that we saw the establishment towards the intergovernmental structures of implementation fora, both at a technical level and at a ministerial level, and these have seen the action towards the delivery on these objectives in collaboration with key partners in government, and more, I think, of that work will become evident during this particular, the new cycle of the new strategic plan of the Department of Basic Education, which we'll be reporting on at the end of this current cycle. We also saw a significant achievement in the annual national assessments, which were conducted in February 2011, in which about 6 million learners at from grades 1 to 6 in approximately 19,000 schools participated in the annual national assessments, and the results were released by the minister in June 2011. What is significant about this particular exercise is that it has given the department and its critical partners in the sector a useful diagnostic tool and a mechanism for identifying and quantifying the extent of the challenge within education and the critical areas of intervention as they need to be attended to by the National Department and its province and the Provincial Education Department. The support that was rendered during this period, I think, will be expanded upon during the discussion session by the respective branches that are responsible for the support work as well as the analysis of the annual national assessment. In terms of literacy and numeracy workbooks, we also saw a significant step being taken by the current administration to firstly announce and then develop in-house the literacy and numeracy workbooks in 11 official languages, and where we use the internal departmental system capacity to both strengthen the teaching and the learning in numeracy and literacy. A total of 105 workbooks were developed. They were printed and distributed to all public primary schools, and the printing of the second workbook was finalized, and the book distributed was distributed in the financial year. Significant strides were also made in revising and simplifying the curriculum, both in the interests of better learning, but also better teaching. The CAP statements have effectively repackaged the national curriculum statement so that it becomes a lot more accessible to classroom practitioners. Every subject in each grade now has a single, concise CAP statement, which provides specific details of what should be taught and assessed on a grade-by-grade basis. The department will ensure that the entire system is prepared for the introduction of CAP, which will be rolled out in phases starting in 2012. Chairperson, we also have representatives on that particular branch that can expand on the detail of this in our discussion. A further significant achievement was the National Planning Framework for Teacher Education and Development. This was developed with our key stakeholders in education, and it has been finalized to guide teacher education and support within the system. The framework was launched by both ministers of basic and higher education and training. I think significant work has already taken place in partnership also with our development partners in the sector to advance the aims of this particular framework. The FCD project is another significant achievement during this period. The Accelerated School Infrastructure Delivery Initiative has been spearheaded by the ministry, and its plans and targets were finalized. But that the plans and the targets for CD were presented both to our HEDCOM and the Council of Education Ministers structures in order to refine the details of that particular initiative. So in spite of government funding constraints, this infrastructure bid was approved, and then additional funds made available to facilitate the delivery on this particular objective. The framework for the backlogs grant, as well as the infrastructure grant to provinces, were finalized by National Treasury and with National Treasury, and more can be said about this during our discussion. There was a government notice to amend the national learner target allocation for 2011, as well as the declaration of a proportion of learners to attend no-fee schools in 2011, which was gazetted on the 5th of November in 2010. For the 2011 academic year, 72% of public school learners are accommodated in more than 20,000 low-fee schools. I want to ask Mr. Kutsir to take over from this point, and then we'll come back to the CFO in the next section. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Chairperson, honourable members, the department conducted a rapid assessment and remediation intervention in underperforming schools.
Sorry, Mr. Kutsir, could you please switch off the
The department conducted a rapid assessment and remediation intervention in underperforming schools, and provinces provided focused support to these schools, resulting in the improvement of the grade 12 examination results in 2010. And despite of all the challenges that were mentioned earlier in terms of the protracted teacher strike, the 2010 National Senior Certificate examinations proceeded well, and the pass rate improved substantially from 60.6% in 2009 to 67.8% in 2010. And honourable members will also recall that this was the period in which the World Cup took place. And it's just an indication that if the nation resolves and put its mind to doing something, that the nation can succeed in doing it. The department has developed two important support tools to improve school management and governance. And those are the school governing body support tools, which will help school governing bodies monitor their performance, and also enable provincial departments of education to identify areas in which school governing bodies require assistance. Then, as well, the annual academic performance reporting template will assist schools in the compilation of annual academic reports, and therefore strengthening the system's ability to identify schools in need of support. I will continue, Honourable Chairperson. A total of 583,200 adult learners, which include blind and deaf learners, were reached during 2010 through the Garigude Math Literacy Campaign. Also, the department introduced the HR Connect project, which was completed in collaboration with the DPSA. And this system will provide us with reliable information on teachers. The profiles created for each teacher through this project provide an accurate indication of what skills we have in the system, enabling us to identify gaps and increase our ability to address such gaps. Regarding the ICMS, the Integrated Quality Management System, during the reporting period of 2010-11, the team provided management advice and support to just over 7,000 schools. The ICMS implementation shows that the system is maturing. Teacher evaluation scores from a number of provinces have become more realistic because they are based on credible evidence. I will continue, honourable members and honourable chairperson. At the beginning of 2011, just around about 1,500 school principals were enrolled in the Advanced Certificate in Education course in an effort to strengthen school management capacity. The NEDU bill was drafted, and interest in teaching has improved significantly, which was reflected in the number of applications for Funza Lushaka bursaries. Over 30,000 applications were received. Just over 10,000 students were funded from the first year of study through to the PGCE, with 1,842 qualifying at the end of 2010. Most bursaries were awarded to students specializing in FET, and then targeted recruitment of students who are able to teach in an African language for the foundation phase and intermediate phases is required. And one can link it up as well in the presentation that was done by the acting DG, where this has been highlighted as well. $15,000 additional early childhood development resource kits were printed and distributed to all district offices across all provinces. And the department is working with the Department of Social Development to collect data from all ECD sites registered with the DSD to promote more accurate information on our grade R coverage. 200 provincial and district officials, as well as school management teams of all schools for hearing and visually impaired learners, were trained in the use of visual and hearing impairment in March 2011. And the policy on learner attendance was gazetted, breathing sessions were held in every province, and policy booklets were distributed to all provinces to assist provinces. And the tools to monitor learner attendance were developed and is being implemented. Through the National School Nutritional Program, Honourable Chairperson, we were able to provide over 8 million learners in 20,215 quintile 1 to 3 primary and quintile 1 and 2 secondary schools with meals. The department has also published a draft integrated strategy on HIV/AIDS for public comment. This strategy, which is aimed at learners, educators, and the wider school community, will guide the department's response to HIV/AIDS and related challenges over the next 5 years. And the school health screening program was facilitated through two school health weeks. The statistics for the March school health week obtained from the Department of Health shows that 42,580 grade 1 learners were screened in the 18 priority health districts. The target of screening 50,000 grade 1 learners in quintile 1 primary school was far exceeded, with almost 150,000 learners that were reached. In addition to this reporting period for 2010-11, the department convened a national quality learning and teaching campaign workshop, and the members may be aware of how this is now escalated in the current financial year that we are in. Now, the workshop was attended by provincial MECs, provincial heads of departments, teacher unions, associations of school, governing bodies, student leaders, and district managers to formulate a strategy for improving the quality of education through the enforcement of the non-negotiables. And we were able to see evidence of that unfolding in the current financial year, which is really good to observe. The partnership between Lead SA, the South African Interfaith Council, and the DBE, through that partnership, we relaunched the Bill of Responsibilities, and a sustained media campaign generated much interest in the Bill of Responsibility. The DBE printed 10,000 teachers' guides and 5,000 CD-ROM copies for distribution to all provincial departments and districts. Honourable members, Honourable Chairperson, at this stage I will hand over to the CFO to take us through part three that deals with the annual financial statements. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I will present the annual financial statements of the department. This slide here is reflecting the allocation and the expenditure of the department according to the five programs within the department. And shortly I will explain where there's under expenditure, the reasons for that. And then the next slide is reflecting expenditure in terms of economic classification, where it's broken into current payments, transfers and subsidies, payments for capital assets. And this is related to the first slide, where there are areas where there's some underspending or savings in some cases. And the reasons for deviation, if we go to program one, the reason for under expenditure was due to compensation of employees. Some of the posts in program one were not filled because of the reorganization of the department. But there was also a saving with regard to payments to UNESCO. These payments are done in foreign currency. So at the time that we paid, the currency was favorable, so we had some saving in that regard. And then with regard to program two, we had understanding in respect of the technical secondary schools, specifically in relation to three provinces, which are Eastern Cape, Mpumalanga, and Limpopo. Because of the low spending in these provinces, the fourth transfer to these provinces was withheld. And the reason that was given by the province was that the procurement process took longer and the delay in paying some of the invoices. But with regard to the workbooks, workbook one was printed and delivered to school. And then workbook two could not be finalized before the financial year. So there was a bit of a delay with workbook two. But the bulk of the money, which is about 400 million, was a saving because of the decision of the department to decide to develop the books internally. So there was a saving of about 400 million then. And then with regard to program three, the underspending was in relation to the NIDU project due to the process of establishing the unit. It took a bit longer than it was anticipated. And with regard to the IQMS, there were vacancies in the IQMS project. So there were some underexpenditure that was encountered there. With regard to program four, under expenditure was due to the annual assessment program. The ANA tests were supposed to be written in November, but due to the industrial action, the tests were rescheduled to February. Now, because of that, by the end of the financial year, we had not received all the invoices, and the external moderators had also not finished their work, so they could not be paid in time. So we had an under expenditure there as well. And then the other part was on the MS system. This one was due to late invoicing by the service provider. We could not pay all the invoices on time because we hadn't received them. And some of the services were still continuing, so we could not pay for the services.
For program 5, there was no material variances on the program. And then the next slide is on the Auditor General's report. The department received an unqualified audit opinion, but there were matters that were raised by the Auditor General. One of the matters was inadequate program performance information. Although the information was submitted to the Auditor General, there were areas that they were not happy with. And then the second area was the continued use of the Department of Education processes and procedures. With regard to this one, when the department split, the two departments resolved to continue using policies of the old department while development of new policies was taking place. We needed to have something to work from. But the auditors were not comfortable with this. They wanted the department to use their own policies. And then there was under-resourcing of the internal audit unit, which also resulted from the split. Because of the split, the directorate was split into two. So there was not enough officials in the unit at the time. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you to the department. I thought the first presenter said, Ellen, the people from the curriculum, do you have anything to say that you want to add on the annual report? You don't have anything? Oh, I thought you said the people from the curriculum will add something.
Honourable Chairperson, what I indicated was that during the discussion session, there are further aspects of clarity that would be raised, that we have representatives from all of the branches present to take on those issues. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Members, I will give over to you to ask questions from what you have heard that is presented by the Department of Basic Education. Let me start from my right and go down. Let me see the hands, because I only saw four hands. Honorable Khasmeni, Honorable Nube, Musodi, Masamaite, Umanga Nsenemia Plati, Civilians will be the last one. Okay. Honorable Khasmeni.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. Let me also take the opportunity to commend the department. Since the matric exams have started, we haven't had anything wrong, any mishap, nothing. It's just cruising quietly and safely. I understand that there has been a framework for the backlog grant and infrastructure grant. It has been implemented. I want to check whether it has been implemented. If it's implemented, how is it progressing on ACIDI, the framework that has been developed? The second question is on how is the rapid assessment and remediation program progressing? The issue of the draft strategy on HIV and AIDS. Yeah, there's this draft integrated strategy on HIV and AIDS. In the meantime, once this draft strategy and integrated strategy has been, we are consulting stakeholders, it's being discussed, it's being looked at. What is in place to try and assist the learners in this regard? The department has also reported that it is in talks with basic, the health department, that it is in talks with basic education about the deployment or providing health services in schools. So there is that kind of relationship that has been developed to try and provide these health services by ensuring that at least each school has a nurse around which will provide that services. So we want to hear from your side, how far are these discussions between health and basic education?
No, thank you, Honorable Acting Chairperson. My first one will be noting the dropout rate at FET phase. Not even at FET phase, from grade 9. 10 shoot up, 11 west, 12 west. So meaning grade 9, before they could even end the general GTC phase, they're already out of the system at this percentage. And the percentage might be lower, but there are warm bodies that are learners, maybe from the poorest of the poor, that are dropping out from grade 9, grade 10, grade 11, grade 12, and worse at grade 12. You also are having close to a quarter that does not pass and also do not repeat. My question would be, what are the mechanisms that the department is putting in place in terms of supporting these learners? Because indicators are there. You've already done the study. So do you have any mechanism of supporting the schools or these learners? Linked to that, do you have any link, because you have basic education and we have higher education, which its responsibility is ALET, FET, and higher education. So as we have these learners that already are there, do you link up with higher education in terms of collaborating in the intervention? And I see you have developed the retention strategy for rural, and I don't think that this high dropout rate at grade 9, 10, 11, and 12 is only at rural. I come from Gauteng, and I know learners from Gauteng also are part of the dropout rate. So this strategy, is it only confined to the retention of learners at only rural areas? And the other one is on the progress on the quality learning and teaching campaign. You are raising the significant progress or achievement. Do you have any challenges? The other one is on the grant of college recapitalization. Is it grant? Not sure. But what I want to know is that what is the progress? Are the technical colleges, as you recapitalize them, adding value to also absorb and help us in this high drop rate? The other one is on the irregular expenditure from the Education Labor Relations Council of about 2.5 million. What are the measures that have been put in place so that this does not happen again? Lastly, it's on the MAT schools. You know there are no MAT schools in Gauteng. However, I have gone to Msinga in September. We went there. We found that, yes, we acknowledge the progress on trying to deal with MAT schools. However, the intervention in terms of doing away with the MAT schools are yielding unintended consequences.
Let me give you one example. We have schools at Msinga that are as a result of doing away with mud schools and put containers as an alternative. But let me give you one example. This school is a high school on top of the mountain, and with no toilets for learners, with no toilets for teachers, with no access to water. The learners are sent with a bucket 2 or 3 kilometers down to the river to pick up the river for drinking and to wash their hands. The issue is, do you have any monitoring mechanism? Do provinces have any monitoring mechanism as and when they give to these service providers, builders, or give us a container, that the minimum standards are being met? Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, my question will be based on this document of the Department of Basic Education, this one, the big one. So my first question will be on page 11, 1.4.1, Education Labor Relations. My first question, Chairperson, will be if the Education Labor Relations Council main function is to settle disputes between parties in the council, why do you have so many strikes in education? The second question, Honorable Chairperson, will be on page 13, on the same document. Improve curriculum implementation. My question will be, Honorable Chair, are our educators suitable, trained, or qualified to implement CAPS curriculum and assessment policy statement? That is my question, Honorable Chairperson. Another one on the same document, Honorable Chair, on page 199, employment and vacancy. Vacancy rate, Honorable Chair, and my question will be, why do you have vacancy rate of 7.41%, whereas there are many graduates who are unemployed, who could have the necessary skills to fill this post? That is the few questions that I'm having for now, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. My question will be in the report of the Auditor General. If you go to page 40, 140 of the AG. Irregular expenditure that the Auditor General found that the department incurred irregular expenditure of 81 million rand due to non-compliance with supply chain management processes. Now, my question is, why the department did not comply with the supply chain management when entering into contract? And if there is a non-compliance, what action has been taken with officials who did not comply with the, you know, supply chain management processes? My question under additional matter an audited supplemental schedule. The Auditor General found that on page 184 to 193, which are an excerpt to the financial statement, does not form part of the audited financial statement and is presented as additional information. That is why the Auditor General is saying he cannot express an opinion on those additional information. Now, I just want to get clarity on that. Why Auditor General cannot express an opinion, whereas funds have been used on those, you know, additional information? Where does this information fall in terms of the Auditor General's report? In the report of the accounting officer, the accounting officer, in terms of the internal audit unit, reported that, not that I missed that page, but I have read about it, reported that the internal audit unit is in place, is functioning. But in terms of the Auditor General, his finding is that the internal audit unit were not, you know, funded in order to perform its functions in the department. Why was it not funded, this unit? Because it was going to assist in terms of the audit, interacting with the office of the Auditor General. Thanks, Honorable Chairperson, for now. I'll come back.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I must first appreciate the report, but Chair, I've got a few questions. Like Chair have indicated at the beginning of the meeting that, and when we introduce ourselves, that some of us are coming from provinces. Some of us. I just knew that you're going to stand up. No, some of the issues that we're going to raise will actually have reference to provinces. So that is why even Honorable Ngobe has indicated about Umutu situation. So I one point that I want to raise, Chair, maybe I must just raise it because I happen to attend a memorial service in the Northwest Province, in a particular district. There was a bid exchange of words between the teacher organization and the district department on one matter. The matter of, you raised it on your slide, where you said there were vacancies on IQMS. So what I want to check with you, why do the department allow provinces to convert the NSNP officials to IQMS coordinators? Because I've seen it, you know, the department and teacher organization throwing a lot of an inappropriate ways on that matter. Because the teacher organization says the department is just promoting food handlers to handle IQMS, they were going to keep them from school, and the department defended that. They said they were teachers, they were from classes. But what I'm saying, why do you allow a situation where there is such critical posts? Because I am thinking that IQMS is a very important instrument. In fact, if you have to go to implement that instrument, you must be sensitive. You will not just convert, you know, some with tier one educators. We have lost track in the curriculum. You bring them back, you said they must come and implement IQMS. I want to check, why are you doing it? That is the first question. And then the second question that I wanted to find out, is there no norms and standards to support underperforming schools, also called trap schools? Why am I asking this question? If there is a system, national system, it must reflect province by province. It should not be implemented in one province, the other province implement the other one. Why I'm saying it, I wanted to check with the department if he's aware of the movement of underperforming principals in one district, in one province, that principal of underperforming schools are being moved to primary schools with so-called termed a mentoring program. Why do you mentor high school principal and take them to a primary school for mentoring? What do you want to achieve doing that? And like I said through you, Chair, I have observed this thing in one province, in one district, and this thing is causing no disturbances again in the curriculum, delivering of the curriculum in schools. So why, the further question, why department does not, instead of taking these principals, moving them to a primary school for mentoring, why don't you enroll them to the program that you have, the ACE management program for principals? Why are you not using that program to improve the capacity of principals instead of throwing them to one school? Because there are two principals that I know of which were not welcomed in various schools. They were sitting outside. One principal has been transferred, now moved from one school, now is in the third school. Does not have nothing to do. He's sitting just there, going to attend school, and it's nothing. But they said it's on mentoring program, from high school to a primary school. That is another problem that I wanted to check with you. Why are you doing it? And the other question, Chair, is on, I have observed that in most of the reports from the department does not speak to or report on the multi-grade classes. Maybe they pretend that they don't exist, but we know for sure that there are schools that have still using the same system of multi-grade classes, and those schools are actually in a bad shape. So why are you not talking to this situation? Because this situation is there, and it's alive. And the last point, Chair, the last question, is on the, well, I will just say Anna, and the systemic evaluation. I know that you speak to currently, all the time there was a systemic evaluation. Now, silently, the systemic evaluation concept is dying. Nobody's talking about it. We're concentrating on Anna. And I was just checking through the report. I saw I did not hear you speaking to the systemic evaluation. Does this Anna replace the systemic evaluation? Or do they went, is a separate instrument? You're using Anna this side, and you're still going to continue using a systemic evaluation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I want to start on the last question my Honorable colleague posed about the Anna result. Now, the department carried out that result in the different schools, provinces, districts, and schools, and so on. Now, my situation is, will that service provider also come to the department and carry out that process? The same in this connection with that question. I'm very interested in that one. And then the status of the assessment in the 27,000 schools indicated in the 2010 State of the Nation Address. Can the department just give us more information about that situation? Is that clear? Maybe it's not clear. The status of the schools assessed, the 27,000 schools indicated in the 2010 State of the Nation Address, 27,000 schools. Excuse me? Yeah, the performance of the schools, that's right, yeah. And then there's a shortage of staff in the International Relations Directorate. What is the program and the process which the department will run to address this problem in the next, say, in a year or two, or maybe in the next year? And then I'm very interested in the problem of the Braille The Braille is only available in English and Afrikaans in grade 1 and 4. Now, why not in the other languages? Or what is the process and the program in the department to supply this Braille also in other languages? Because in the other language communities, there is also that problem, or people or children who can't see. And then the sign language. Is there any plan to implement sign language at school? We recently visited in our provincial week a school in Worcester, and there I saw that it is very important for us also to communicate with those people who can only communicate through sign language. That is a huge lack and vacuum in our education department. And then I'm also worried about, say, Honorable Chairperson, you must stop me if you have too many questions. Okay, all right, thank you. In grade 4, yeah, you can see right here. In grade 4, 81.7% of our learners get their training and education in English. And that is one of the problems, especially amongst our learners in the primary schools. If you can't understand the language properly, then you will have a very worse outcome in the results. Now, what is the program in the department to do away with that situation? Then there's 50,000 learners pregnant in 2008. Now, what is the situation in 2009 and 2010? And what is the program from the department side, especially in the schools, to educate the learners, not only the girls, but especially, Honorable Chairperson, the boys. Because the boys make the first step. It's not the girls. The boys make the first step.
Are you sure?
Yes, I'm sure. I'm sure. I'm very much sure about that. And then the leave situation on page 212.
Honorable Julius, that should be your last question then.
My last one. I do have five other schools.
Okay.
But in the second round. Leave 2000, page 212. Especially, let me just go there because I must give you that information. 212. Yes, in this document. Now, I can see the lower skilled levels 1 and 2. There's a 78.57% sick leave. And so you can carry on. 48.67%, 91.5%, higher skilled, production level 6.8%, and then senior management 52.85%. That is in connection with the leave. Can the department just tell us what is the progress and the program they follow to address the situation? Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Chidilas, Honorable Buroto, and welcome.
Thank you, Chair. I did come late, but fortunately I come from constituencies. And in our constituencies, we usually make some turnarounds in the schools. I've got issues that come from my constituents that relate to education. Maybe let me just start with this one on page 18. of the presentation about the technical secondary schools recapitalization conditional grant. You know, it pains me so much to see that there was understanding, that there was money unspent on this, especially on the three provinces that I regard as the rural provinces, as the poor provinces. Why it worries me, Chairperson, is, you know, in the past, when we went to school, when the promotion of technical secondary schools was for a particular elite group, and we didn't understand it because the indoctrination told us that you have to wear a tie, you know, to be the best. Yeah, and a jacket. And I think that is where we lost it. And I believe today we should be ensuring our children in those poor rural areas that it is very important for them to be skilled so that work can come to them and not them go and look for work. And this technical secondary schools is part of those things that would be assisting us in this instance. And now if the money is not spent, what is the department really seeing the necessity of this secondary secondary schools? Because to me, they are very important. That mindset in the past where when a child went to a technical school, it means he's a slow learner or he's got a barrier. That is the mindset that we should remove. But now, if there is such, I am very worried, and it happens in the provinces where it is needed most. In the rural provinces. So, please, as the department, I'm really worried about this, and I think maybe you should assist the provinces in making sure that this particular type of schools are promoted and learners have got an interest in that. I know you would go to that school, there is a Ambachan where you grew up, and Ambachan is where you don't worry. So it worries me, Chairperson. I just want to hear what might be the reason why the provinces are not moving on this and procuring and making sure that it runs. The other one that I have is this one of textbooks and catalogs. You know, when we go to every time when the schools reopens and closes, from our constituencies, as I said, we go to schools. We went to this one school, and the teacher in particular, because we look at the results and how are they performing and so on. This particular teacher was complaining that they don't have the good textbooks. Well, in quotes, good. And good means the one that he believes could assist the learners and himself. And when he said, but you are sent catalogs, you are the ones who should be ordering these books, they said, yes, they sent us catalogs, we order books, but the district or the region decides what we get. Now, how do you monitor that one, that situation? They do that because they are looking at the prices, for instance. And we were told, I'm just bringing it here, maybe it is a rumor, but it might be true, that these publishers also have got an influence because they know how to go to the people who should procure those books and just convince them to buy their own, not what the teachers want. So how do you go about and check as to whether the books that the teachers have ordered are there? Because what I know, according to the advice of the subject advisors, the particular schools we know, no, this is the correct book that we want. But the department sent something different. It has happened in many schools that I've been to, and it seems it's a recurring problem. And with the changes of curriculum, we must understand that these teachers also need help. So as they need the help, and they need the books that will help them, that is not happening. Publishers also, they have their own ways of bribing or whatever,
for the department to buy theirs and not whatever. So they buy in bulk, not regarding what is supposed to happen about the school choosing what they want. The other one is mostly concerns, but you can talk on them. It's these learners with barriers, or learners with special needs, let me put it that way. I'm happy that you are training educators to assist, but you know where I come from, it's very pathetic. Most of the learners, if you are somehow disabled or you have a special need somehow, you have a particular barrier, you are just going to stay home with your parents and that's it. Except if there is an NGO, I don't know why this is pushed towards NGOs, where you find that NGOs try, a particular person feels for these kids who are at home, and then he just starts and say, okay, let me assist these kids and start a school. Just, you know, the parents will pay, the kids will go there and just meet. I visit these places. I'm coming from the former Kwandebele area, and you can see where I come from, the rural area. You go there, there is one school you go, I went to. They just go there the whole day, they are playing, the teachers don't have methodology, they are just there with them, they get funding somewhere, you know. Why don't we, as a department, make sure that we identify those particular areas where maybe the NGOs or the volunteers started this project and make sure that we assist? Really, as a department of education, it's very pathetic. The kids are collected by bus, which is not even friendly for some of them who are somehow disabled. Some are mentally disabled. You know, it's not right what I see. But what I see is that the department, please make sure you have more schools. I know we are talking about inclusive education, where everybody will be in the same situation, but we don't have those teachers there in those schools. We have learners who are using wheelchairs. We don't even have what is the correct infrastructure for them. And that thing seems not to be taken care of. And I urge you, our communities out there feel left out because their kids are not normal. I'm saying those words. Very serious. I just want you us to understand their kids are not normal, hence they can't go to school. Because if you have to go to school, you must have money. And because those schools can only be found in those areas, urban areas, in towns, where they can pay a lot. But for our ordinary people on the ground, we don't see any movement so far. Where I come from, I can't point any school and say we are assisting them. Teachers cannot handle. You can take a child who really cannot to a teacher who is not ready himself to deal with it. Let's look into that. It's my plea from where I come from. Lastly, is this issue as the Eastern Cape? Yeah, my disclaimer. Anguye Eastern Cape in Mpumalanga, but it worries me. I come from Mpumalanga, but it worries me because so far, my expectations would be the 2010-11 would be much better. Now, if there is a disclaimer, my mind says, were documents submitted? What is happening? Because we have got a task team there. What is really happening? Please tell us what's happening in the Eastern Cape. We cannot continue to see this happening. If you are going to tell us that, no, in the next financial year it will be better, I'm not taking that. What is happening now? Chair, let me stop there. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable members. I've got few questions. I think it's additional on what the honorable members or what the honorable members have just said. For example, the last question that honorable Broto have said. The Department of Education has posed intervention in the Eastern Cape, and I would like to know, after the President's visit in the Eastern Cape at the beginning of the year, what is the progress? What is happening? Because what I know, there is a lot of dismissals
that happened in the Eastern, lot of suspension in the district departments and whatever. What is the Department of Education, of Basic Education, doing on those issues? On the if there are dismissals and suspension, for sure there is a shortage of staff then now in the offices. What is the what are your administration intervention strategies to help the Eastern Cape on that? There is also the Funza Lushaka bursary that was inaccessible to the rural areas. How did you manage that? Is it now accessible to people in the rural areas, or it's only known in Cape Town? Because I can see in Cape Town it is working, in the Western Cape it is working. The third question is on the issue that Honorable Blakey have raised of the principals that are managers of schools. Principals don't fail because they don't teach. They are managers, they are managing schools. And if they are taken from primary school to, from high school to primary school, their style is, does that change their style of management? Because if they were not managing well in the high school, how are they going to manage in the primary school? Because their job is to manage the work in the school. And also the one raised by Honorable de Villiers also, I'm worried about the schools that are, and Honorable Barotho has also pointed out the schools that these children with special needs.
Yeah.
We've got schools in the Eastern Cape, over my Efata, St. Peter's or St. Mary's or the Saints schools, that are not functioning well. People from those schools are phoning in and out asking me, what are you doing as parliamentarians? They can't, in fact, differentiate between a member of parliament and the Department of Education nationally. If you are a member of parliament, you are in the education and committee. Definitely you are the Department of Education, so you have to do something. Can we check, because EFATA, they say the progress in EFATA is going down, drastically down at EFATA. Even the appearance of the infrastructure, the appearance of the school, even the children themselves in EFATA, they are not, their situation is not okay. I've got that from the educators in EFATA, because they say the curriculum keep on changing and it's affecting their children. The children that are getting out of EFATA now, they're not getting any jobs because they can't do anything when they are outside. They are unemployable. Let me say that they are unemployable. They don't have skills now. They used to have skills, but they don't have skills. But they are just sitting there, and they've got staff and new staff members that are being employed. I just want also to know about the program of whole school evaluation. Is there a monitoring system in this program? Is it still happening at school, or it was just there the past 7 years, but it's no more working for the schools? Do you have also institution in the country that offer, I'm not sure is this for higher education, but in your bilaterals, do you have institution that offers foundation phase programs, colleges? Now that the colleges were closed, are there any institutions that offer those programs? I think that will be all for now. I'm not sure are we going to have another round, because it's quarter to 12 already now.
Maybe.
No. If you don't have time, then you just pose the questions written to the department.
Do you think so? Okay.
Yeah.
Are there any members that want? Okay. Honorable.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Let me start on the second round with the inner city schools. As I've said, I'm from Gauteng. I know it's not your responsibility, but you have an overall responsibility for accountability. The inner city schools in Gauteng, they perform very bad, between 0 to 5 and 0 to 10 and whatever, and they're funded from the taxpayers' money. Do you have any policy to say, maybe we will fund you, you perform at this level, from there we will draw your funding? I know also that the beneficiaries are our own African children, but there is no justice that is done there. Linked to that,
yes.
Well,
I'm very sorry to interrupt. Yes.
Honorable,
yeah, is this the second round or is it the first round? Still the first round.
Didn't you suggest that I continue with questions?
No.
I am continuing.
My suggestion, Chairperson, my suggestion was, if we don't have time for the second round, we can just pose those questions to the department. So I'm actually waiting on the first round question. But if you conduct
Honorable,
if we carry on with the second round, I don't have a problem.
Honorable Zia, continue with the question.
Okay.
You see, you've cut me now. You make me to forget.
I ask you. Apology. Yeah.
Shit. put me on off track. Let me leave it because you make me to forget. Let me indicate, you have talked about from grade 1, there are schools that teach in the African language and then phase in other languages. However, there are schools that continue from grade 4, grade 5, grade 6 with the African language, which do not have access to African workbooks or African textbooks. When I left teaching or left education in 2009, that was still a problem with the publishers of not responding to that need, and educators there are left to chance to translate from English to Zulu or to Xhosa or to whatever. Is there, as you said, as you mitigate against the expenditure and do the workbooks, are you responding to that need? The other one is on scholar transport. Also, I know it's provincial competency. However, this problem of each province responding differently, locating scholar transport to education. Let's make an example. In September, it was the month, October. In October, it was the month of transport. But what happened from day one on the 3rd of October was children dying en masse on scholar transport. We found that in one transport of carrying 16, learners are packed like sardines, a kumbi of 16 carries 40 or 50, and then they get an accident. Also, I want to commend the Department of Transport. They have taken out most of the roadworthiness out of the system. However, they take them out, tomorrow they are back, because schools could not look into the how bad is that, they continue transporting. So where I'm getting to is that until looking into have a national policy of saying each province, there's a scholar transport to be located under Department of Transport, whether there's man or not, but I think it's the shifting of the goalposts. The other one is on the Funza Lushaka. The purpose of Funza Lushaka is to recruit teachers to be, specifically to have math, specialized in math and science, and at the end of the graduation are then supposed to be deployed in rural areas. Is that condition still there? Because in your report you say the data is in the district. But I know in Eastern Cape, today, they still are not having math and science teachers. Does it happen that, because I know I come from Gauteng, there are learners from Gauteng that are on Funza Lushaka and go back and teach in Gauteng. But linked to that, I know Gauteng was having an agreement with the foreign teachers for math and science who are already in Gauteng. And I've met with them, that's very good. However, I want to know whether, because of this shortage of math and science teachers, is that been extended? Are there any inroads of other provinces doing the same thing? They might be available maybe in Limpopo and whatever, the foreign teachers, to help in math and science. The other one is on revision of the quintiles. How soon are you going to implement this revision? My constituency is Cape Town, which has Eldorado Park. And Eldorado Park, people may think it's middle class because of the houses that were built during apartheid. And it's not middle class. But in terms of the quintiles, the schools were classified as quintile 3. And when we visited them, they said, just look, the parents are poor, the learners are poor, just look at what they're wearing. And we are classified as quintile 3, and we're not benefiting. So how soon is the implementation of the quintile? Thank you.
Two questions, Chairperson. One is that what progress has the department and the ETDP CETA made in verifying the number of ECD practitioners in training, as well as evaluating the training programs? The second one is, what is the state of the technical schools in the country, and how was the 80 million rand for technical schools recapitalization grant used in the year under review?
Thank
you. Yeah. Okay, only one question. I've got five others, but I will just put one. And the one is about the Eastern Cape, the progress. What is the situation now in the Eastern Cape around the education problem? I know that we as the NCOP, we took a decision about it, but it is under the education department to see that problem in the Eastern Cape must be addressed. Just that question.
Okay, over to the Department of Education to respond to the question.
Thank you, Chair. We're going to try to respond, and if we do not complete all, we'll provide written responses. I will start with my colleagues, Simon Nkeya, and then Mr. Skuman, and then we'll go to Mr. Kojana, and myself and the CFO and I will close off.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll start with a question on the ELRC, which was around why there are so many strikes. I think last year was a unique year. Maybe we should contextualize that. Although when the strikes happen, they are very badly, it appears like things are really bad because it's published all over the papers and everyone is suffering, especially us in education. But we've actually not had many strikes in the country. We've only had three of them. They happen when we are conducting the public service wage negotiations. So it is across all the departments. It's not the ELRC only. And education sits in the Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Council. So last year was that year when we had the wage negotiations, and that strike happened in that context where education unions joined the rest of the public service to become part of the strike. And the way we can settle and try and prevent so many strikes, or the perception that there are many strikes happening, is if we can achieve a multi-term agreement. Now, last year we did not achieve a multi-term agreement. It was a single-term agreement. We had negotiations again. This year we have another single-term agreement. So if we can get it right to have like a three-year agreement or a five-year agreement, it definitely will settle the whole of the public service, not only education, and we would stand to benefit. So we always try to get that. Then the issue about the irregular expenditure in the ELRC. This was a unique matter that occurred. The history behind it is that when we split in the department between higher education and basic education, you will remember there's this group of lecturers who belong to the FET colleges. Now, the FET colleges moved to higher education. Now, on our books in the provinces, there are about 6,000 of these people who were there. But the colleges, because they are independent employers, they also employed lecturers. So in the new department, what had to happen was you needed to have a full audit of how many of these people there were. In the ELRC, they agreed to fund that. But it didn't appear as if the information in the initial terms of reference was not clear that there were so many people that were employed by the colleges. So as the service provider was doing the audit, the numbers, it was first about the 6,000 people. But when they got to the colleges, they started to realize there is these many people here. So the price in the extent of the work went up. And it was not the original price that was there. And so because of that, and that work had to be completed, there was, you had to do a viament, and that's where the irregular expenditure came from in the ELRC. So it's a unique situation, and the way the ELRC looked at it was that at the end of the day, you need to have the correct data, because all of these people belong in the ELRC. And you also need to know how much of money needs to be collected, even if some are employed when they came together as a college, they all were in the college now. But initially some were in the department and others were in the college. So they needed that stat. And so it's a once-off exercise which we don't see that it can happen again. And then from a risk management point of view, there are mechanisms that have been put in place to try and see how you can limit any further irregular expenditure in the ELRC. In relation to the vacancies around the IQMS, the IQMS vacancies we talk about in the national department are posts that we employ. We had 100 posts that we created in the national department. These people, although they belong to us, they work in the provinces. So they are not employed by the provinces, but by the national department. And we had vacancies that occurred there. And I think currently we've got about 79 of these people that were employed. Now, they were employed for 3 years, and their contract was coming to an end, and we were unsure whether we were going to extend the contract or whether we were going to stop having these moderators. So in that period, before we got to the point of agreeing that we would extend, we didn't employ more people. And so that was the reason why there was that vacancy rate that we had with the ITMS people. It is different from the situation in the Northwest, which has been asked around the NSNP people that are now being employed as ITMS coordinators. That is a provincial initiative that is happening, and perhaps my colleagues that deal with the nutrition can talk a little bit more about that. From the side of the provinces, our understanding is when they are employing people to do the IQMS, it would be the actual evaluation. It's different to what our moderators do. Our moderators are moderating the work of the IQMS coordinators in the provinces. I think we can monitor that from the side of the national department, since it has been brought to our attention, just to establish if they are doing the right thing, if these people are suitably qualified, and to advise the province if it is incorrect what they are doing. but I don't have the detail of the information that has been provided. The issue around the program of the whole school evaluation, I'm just taking a long shot at this one because it's a new program that has been transferred to us. With the split of the two departments, we also had to reshape our department to try and manage how our posts are. So what has happened now is the whole school evaluation has merged with IQMS directly, so they will be doing both. The information I have on whole school evaluation is the policy has always been there. The visits and the evaluation have to happen in the provinces as the policy indicates. For high school, you must do it over three years, and for primary schools, you have to do it over 5 years in the evaluation.
Can you have order then? Department officials, order please.
Thank you, Chair. So these reports come on an annual basis, and they have been happening. But in the provinces, because there have been difficulties in the way in which our school evaluation has unfolded, they have not covered the extent of the number of schools that the policy indicates that you have to do. And those were some of the reasons why, from the side of the national department, we even then considered to have the NEDU unit established, which would go a bit further in trying to do much of the kind of work that the whole school evaluation has done. So with the establishment of the whole school evaluation unit, the NEDU unit, it then requires us to rethink the extent to which whole school evaluation is a duplication of NEDU and what exactly we need to do if there are similarities in what they do, because there is still a need for the Department of Education, the National Department, to be doing its own audit in a way of what is going on in the schools. The NEDU will be the external audit that comes to verify that, but we need to know what is going on. So perhaps some of it would be in our rethinking of it, that's the area that we would have to look at. And maybe some of what we would have to say is instead of it being an evaluation is to look at the extent to which it needs to be development, whole school development, rather than whole school evaluation, so that you don't have confusion between NEDU and whole school evaluation. But it's still a program that is currently undergoing. It's not to the success rate that it should in the what the policy says, but in as far as we do receive the reports, there is an annual report that the department puts together that indicates all the provinces and then gives a national report on whole school evaluation currently. Thank you,
Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. The first one that I'm going to answer is on the 7.4% vacancy rate that the Honourable Member asked. Just to take the Honourable Members back to the split of the Department of Education, what happened there is that the Department of Education was then split in higher education and basic education with two provisos. First of all, National Treasury said that no money would be given to either one of the departments, and secondly, that we could not create new positions. So we had to take the people that was allocated to basic education and higher education. Now, the split happened on a 52-48% ratio. 52 went to basic education. What we've ever received since the start of the department, the functioning of the department. That's not when the proclamation kicked in, but as Honourable Member see, 1st April 2010, when the two departments started to function separately, is that we've received 18 million from Treasury to try and assist in pressures on HR. Now, this is what this 7.4% is, ma'am. So we've created positions. They are in a position to be advertised at the moment, and they will be full. So if you're happy with that. The second question is on the irregular expenditure, Honourable Member. I must ensure you that there's nobody in the department that is part of this. It is unfortunately a project that was brought over from the old Department of Education. It was established under the old Department of Education. The Karaguchi project. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you're familiar with that. This is to try to provide literacy and numeracy to people that never had the chance in the country. So what the Department of Education did is they went out on a tender because they never had the human resources to run a project like this. So a service provider was then brought in to manage this for the department. Now that tender procedure was audited by the AG. There's nothing wrong with it. The 81 million occurred in this year's audit, where the AG then, there was a dispute between the department and the AG actually, to say that the department was of the view that due to the fact that it is a service provider that do these things for the department, and then the department only sign off on what, after moderation, that the service provider was not supposed to follow government procedures. The AG felt they had to. We then went to National Treasury, and National Treasury indicated that they had to follow government procedures around that. Now, Honourable Member, what the AG found was a VAT certificate of one of the sub-service providers that were not valid at that time, but it was then changed and a new VAT certificate was brought in. And then four people were transported without getting free quotations. And four people were transported without getting three quotations on that, but the transport was provided by the contractor of that company that was appointed. The amount that was unauthorized was 120,000 rand. But the AG then said, due to the fact that they did not have time to go through the whole thing, they made the whole project unauthorized, and that's where the 81 million comes from. What we've done, we wrote a letter, we went to the DG to request that that be authorized. We then wrote a letter to the service provider to say to them that this is the view of National Treasury and that we want them to immediately follow government procedures in all instances, and that they can get in touch. We actually got in touch with them and gave them all the regulations and worked through them. We've received a letter back from the service provider now to state that they are doing that. We had a meeting with the AG yesterday where it was reported to them, so I think the matter can be put to rest. But it was from the old Department of Education, and no departmental official was involved in anything.
Okay. You, must I take a follow-up, or can I carry on with the other question? Okay.
On the situation of the AG, they don't have time in connection with the irregular expenses. That is wrong to the department. And the department does it in the documents now. There's an irregular expenses of what? 8 million?
81
million. It's only 120,000 rand. That must immediately take up, and that must be addressed.
Honourable Chair, thanks for that, Honourable Member. Honourable Chair, we did address that in the Audit Committee of the Department, and this was also very sharply raised by the Chairperson of the Departmental Audit Committee, and said to the AG that the Department cannot take. During that period, we came to an agreement due to the fact that it was the first audit of the Department of Basic Education that we did get an unqualified audit report. It was left. But I think we should have raised it more sharply, and thank you very much for that. The Internal Audit Unit, Honourable Chair, as was indicated in the presentation, this happened with the split of the department. So the internal audit unit was also split in two, sir. due to the fact that there was no money to get extra people, we only received the money now. We've created additional capacity there, and that will be filled. The director, internal audit, will be appointed now. The submission is with the minister at the moment. That has been addressed. But the budget, I think your question was, why were they never budgeted for the internal audit? There were money for them to do their work. It's the fact I think there was not enough capacity to do the work, but that's been addressed, sir.
No, my question, Honorable Chair, was that there is a contradictory report here.
Okay, I'm sorry. There is a contradictory report in the report, which from the accounting officer says the internal audit unit is there, is functioning. But the auditor general, his finding was that the internal audit unit was not functioning because it was not well resourced. So there is a contradictory report.
Hmm.
Yes, I can. I think I've addressed it in the way it is 100% through. The internal audit was functioning, but they were not staffed correctly. And due to the fact that we've now received money, we have staffed them now in a way that they can function. Yes, sir. Okay, the shortage of staff in the International Relations Directorate, I think that's exactly the same, sir, as I have gathered now. With a split, half of the staff stayed in higher education, the other half of the staff went to basic education. From the 18 million, we have now identified crucial posts, and that is advertised and filled. Some of them are in the International Relations Directorate, one or two, not a lot, because 18 million, you can't go very far with 18 million rand if you look at that. The leave. The percentages in that table is rather odd, but it is unfortunately worked out like that. The question is, like, how does the department then see to it that this does not happen? There is a pillar appointed. This is a health risk manager, point number one, that looks at sick leave taken in the public service. I must say to the committee that we refer leave forms that we receive that we are not in agreement with to this health risk manager. And this is it has to be done by all the departments. We get a lot back where sick leave are then disallowed and then leave without pay is granted. That is the one option. The second option that we did in our second measure that we did in the department is that we, through the Director General, we regulate this heavily at the moment. The regulations say that a person can take sick leave if it's less than 3 days. You don't have to apply a medical certificate. If it is more than 2 days, you have to apply or attach a medical certificate to leave, and the department is following that 100%. I think a health risk manager is a better way to deal through that. Thank you. And I think that's all. Thank you.
Do you have a follow-up or a new question?
No, it's not a new question. It's on the sick leave.
Chairperson, my question is actually, is there some discussion between the health risk manager, especially with the staff, to tell them that there's actually a problem around the sick leave, taking sick leave, and that they must just put attention to that there's not so many people going on sick leave? Because when I was in the education department, not the department, but in school, I regularly spoke to my teachers and tell them that situation is actually a problem at school. I know due to labor relations, they can take it, but just to see to it that you can improve. Is there that program also?
Our follow-up question now, because we don't have time, we will have to write them down from now onwards.
Mr.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members and colleagues. Myself and my colleague, we are going to try to respond to some of the questions around social responsibility. Firstly, in addressing the question around the QLTC and its challenges. After the launch of the QLTC, we have solicited a buy-in from the political heads in the department, that is the MECs, as reported, as well as the provincial heads of the department, to be part and parcel of this particular important program of advocating the non-negotiables in schools with the organized teacher unions. We're subsequently joined in by organizations such as Contralesa to be part and parcel of mobilizing society to support the objectives of the department, particularly the government. Key important issue beyond creating structures in all provinces, we had to develop a very, very clear strategy and plans for the QLTC with clear deliverables, one of which is about monitoring and supporting the rollout of the QLTC principles, the adoption of schools, especially the poor performing schools. Another one is about creating labor peace and speedy resolution to disciplinary matters. Furthermore, we, in July this year, we saw a major contributory factor in advancing the work of the QLTC about the signing of the NEDLAC Accord on Basic Education, which is part and parcel of the new growth path of government in creating more than 5 million jobs, new jobs, by year 2020. And the fundamental was around ensuring that schooling system must be correct in order to deal with the job creation in the country. Government, labor, business, as well as the community constituencies signed this particular important accord, which created a constraint on how, because the accord is more specific, that one of its major activities would be to mobilize society, but at the same time, it is to adopt poor performing schools so that there are very clear measurable outputs in the process. That has posed a challenge that we had to deal with immediately of coming up with a plan on the rules of engagement on how you would adopt schools. Because you don't want people just to adopt schools. That will create a big flood. We subsequently had to quickly come up with clear protocol of engagement while we welcome the idea, but what is much more important is how best we protect the learning and teaching space. We have recently developed internally a document that will guide adopters and the public on the matter, because it is very, very important for the new growth path that this principle of ensuring that the broad objective of ensuring that we improve quality education in our country is as part and parcel of social responsibility is enhanced. We are engaged in that particular exercise vigorously. Pursuant to that, the NEDLAC partners with the Department of Education, of Basic Education, we have actually launched that accord in Butterworth on the 2nd of October. And all key stakeholders participated in the process. And there's a huge support for this particular initiative. And there's a rollout plan that it is launched in all provinces. We have started consulting on the 23rd, on focusing on just some few schools, but the bigger scale will be in February on the 4th. And we'll roll out in also in other provinces very, very soon. But the intention is that come at the end of March, we should have launched this particular court in all provinces. So those are major challenges that we are trying to mitigate from time to time, because we are flooded with lots of requests. The second key question that I'm going to deal with is about curbing pregnancy in schools. What activities that the department are having in order to deal with this thing. First, I must indicate that the report that the acting DG presented was on the figures of 2008 and 2009. And the report that we're providing here is a report of 2010 to 2011. So it was going to be impossible for us to give you precise figures. That is why he spoke of the report for 2008 and 2009, that the figures are still at 50,000 in terms of the teenage pregnancy. In ensuring that gender-related barriers in schools are reduced, in a more systematic way, the department felt it very, very important that we need to strengthen this aspect in the curriculum, that is through life orientation, because you can come up with intervention programs that is not going to be to assist. But systematically, we focus on the curriculum. And as a department, we are following through the CAPS review process of training educators on the new curriculum. So that is one measure that we're doing. Secondly, we have also, as part and parcel of the activities, distributed sexual harassment guidelines for learners in public schools. And the Speak Out handbook was also distributed to provinces. What we'll do, we'll provide members with copies. In fact, I must indicate that firstly, we need to provide members with that NEDLAC accord so that you are familiar with, and also the document that we are talking about. One of the activities is to release and oversee the implementation of the pregnancy. The strategy has been developed here, but it is internally. Once completed and approved, we'll be able to release such a strategy. Another important aspect that we felt it was very important to have a very, very interactive activity around the issues of ensuring gender-related barriers in schooling are reduced. We have created GEMBEM clubs, that is your girl education movement, your boys education movement, to engage learners on social issues that affect them on a regular basis and create a platform for learners to start to speak about this thing in a much more interactive manner. These are some of the issues that the department have engaged. My colleague will also speak on the other matters that are related to health. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Just to follow up on Mr. Gojana's point on the teenage pregnancy work that you are doing in the department, it fits in very nicely with the question that was asked to us about the HIV strategy that we're developing. Because what the department is doing is taking a comprehensive approach to sexual and reproductive health in the realization that the behaviors and the risk factors that lead to teenage pregnancies are the same ones that contribute to HIV infection. So we're taking that holistic view and having not just HIV prevalence and incidence as an outcome for the success of our program, but also the degree to which we're curbing and, you know, diminishing the teenage pregnancy statistics. The question that we were asked was, what are we implementing now that we're developing the new strategy? It's important to indicate that the new strategy is really meant to strengthen the work that we already have been doing, but more importantly, to also align the work that the department is doing on HIV and AIDS to the National Strategic Plan for HIV and AIDS that the country is developing, that is led by the Department of Health and the South African National AIDS Council. So that education finds, as a department, finds its rightful place within that bigger, broader country approach on HIV, and we don't do something that is separate and doesn't speak to what the country needs to be doing. So currently we have a program that's called the Life Skills Education Program. that we've implemented in all schools, and it's funded through a conditional grant from National Treasury. And that program has three key areas of it. It's the what is offered through the life orientation learning area, through which we the training that is offered, you know, to educators to increase their own content, but also their ability to teach sexuality education. We also, through that program, procure supportive materials, you know, that are appropriate and are going to assist in the delivery of the curriculum. And thirdly, there's an increasing component of care and support, because as we all know, as South Africans, you know, why is it important for us to strengthen the HIV prevention link, which is the two things I've spoken about earlier. We also have children who are infected but are also affected by HIV and who are orphans within the school. So increasingly, we're having to deal with that component within the school, and that also is funded through the conditional grant, as I already referred to. So we're strengthening implementation of those programs, so there's nothing that has stopped as we're developing the strategies, really just meant to increase and strengthen the work. Finally, I'm going to respond to the question that was asked about the health screening program and the work with the Department of Health in trying to get the presence of health workers within all our schools. The two departments, the Department of Health and Education, are developing an integrated school health program. And really, we are following on the marching orders that we were all given by the Minister of Health and the Minister of Basic Education, that we need to strengthen this work so that we can provide health education, but also health screening for children within the school environment. The major challenge that I really would like the honourable members to note around this is really the capacity of the health system to provide school health services, because nationwide, we have about 500 school health nurses, but within schools, we have 12 million learners. And new entrants into the schooling system is about 1 million grade 1 and another 500,000 grade R. So, you know, 500 doesn't go into 1.5 million. It's impossible to do. So we're having to look at other, to use the health, the professional nurses as almost roving team leaders, and develop a health team that is going to be available to go into the schools in a more systematic manner to provide the package. So at the moment, there's a joint task team between the two departments that is determining the service package, the composition of that health team, the resourcing that will be required to fully implement it in phases, you know, over time. And we are hoping that the work of that task team will be finalized within the next few months. Certainly the ministers are quite urgent, and that work is overseen by the respective deputy director generals in the two departments. And a plan will then be provided to the two ministers, and once they are quite comfortable that we have a well-thought-out plan that we can implement moving forward, the plan will then be announced and implemented. It's important also to indicate that we haven't stopped doing any work, particularly around health screening, whilst we're waiting for this plan to develop and be implemented. So the figures that were presented here around health screening is work that is continuing to happen in the various districts in the country. And we're really targeting the poorest districts, which are the 18 priority health districts that the health department has identified, but also the quintile 1 and 2 primary schools. And where the capacity exists, it is implemented in a lot more of the quintiles than those two, but we're really targeting, you know, to make sure that we go to where the most need is. So the plans are on track, and we're working quite vigorously to try and implement, and once the progress is done, I'm sure we'll have the opportunity to come back and report to you on this meeting.
I would like to also answer a question that you have not asked today about school sport, which you engaged us previously. Yes. So I've decided to answer that question by indicating that on the 5th of November, the ministers of basic education and of sport would be signing the memorandum maybe you might have heard it over the radios as well as the television. We have immediately, when I went outside, I was ensuring that members are invited to that launch through the office of the secretariat, so that you attend the launch, so that all other matters that relate, you will get copies once they are signed of the memorandum of understanding between the two departments, as well as that integrated plan that talk to issues of infrastructure and other matters that you raised. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the report. I will finish in answering the questions, or I will consult him.
Dr. Nzama and Ndambi will take care of the teachers.
And Ndambi will handle that of Fuzalusha. But let me start by handling that of why our principals were underperforming in high schools in some provinces, transferred or taken to primary schools. And I also linked it to the ACE, because it was mentioned somewhere that why not also use the ACE to assist the underperforming principals improve. I want to start by mentioning that DBE does not encourage that principals should be moved from the high school to the primary school. It's discouraging that. In fact, we're not aware, and if you get information on that, we'll have to attend to that accordingly. To support the statement, you all know that in the past, matric exam was used as a barometer to measure the systemic health of schools, which means primary schools were left out. But this time, that is not the case, because of ANA. ANA is a barometer to measure the systemic health of primary schools. In other words, there's no way in which you can take failure from the high school and transfer it to the primary school, because we value everything as basic education, and we believe in quality, a basic education. And the other thing is that a decision was also taken at HEDCON, and it's very clear as to what is it that needs to be done to assist the underperforming principals of schools. And when they say underperforming, this time they're not talking about high school principals. It's across the system, primary and secondary. One, they mentioned the question of the use of the modular approach of ACE. When I say modular approach, in that case, to start with, I'm not talking about the whole qualification, but depending on the needs and the gaps that have been identified, then certain modules can be recommended that those principles are made just to register for those modules that will assist them. Take, for instance, financial management. There is a module in that, or curriculum management, because it is a problem which we have discovered that some of the principals are not instructional leaders. And yet that is very important, that they must manage the curriculum. When a student principal is speaking about the buildings, setting off the premises and so on, he's not talking about the core, which is the core business, which is the quality of teaching and learning, as well as the basic outcome, which is improved learner performance. Two, the use of the qualification itself. So one is the selected modules, and the other one is the qualification itself. And you'll realize that in the report that was presented to you by my colleagues, some way it was mentioned that for 2011, 1,488 principals from various provinces have enrolled for the ACE. So among those, some are those underperforming principals who were identified for that so that they could be assisted. Maybe the only province, and we know, and it's going to be explained, is only Eastern Cape that's not part of that 1,000 families, because of the problems they have. But you've been made to understand that it's from 2012, they'll be part of it, especially because they've got very good investors that have been doing good work there in the Eastern Cape. But just in 2011, there's not even one for now. And then the other thing, though it's not for underperforming, but worth mentioning, is the question of induction for newly appointed principals of schools, heads of departments, and deputies. What we are doing as national is to assist in terms of providing framework for content of the programs, because programs are doing that, but they need to be guided by us, and we are involved in that as national. And then the other thing that was identified by HEDCOM is mentoring and coaching. We are working on that, though we have not come out with a plan, but we haven't started implementing it. But small mentoring using the retired principal schools as well as retired inspectors to target specific underperforming principals to see how they can be assisted. And also it is worth mentioning that internally in the department, but this has not been finalized, we are conceptualizing competence assessment so that there will be a time when we can have competence assessment for principals of schools, target advisors, circuit managers, and district managers, so to identify the gaps. It won't be negative, it's positive, but to help the accounting is happening right now and it's being piloted. And we're also learning lessons from the exercise that is taking place in Gauteng, which is being piloted, as I've indicated in the Gauteng department. And also, it is worth mentioning that the ACE program, I'm talking now about the cohort, say for 2011, the 1,480, because of the research that has been done there by Professor Bush, there are two reports, that of the first cohort, which was 2007-2009, and the other external report on the impact, which came out in 2010, gave us a lot of input or information in terms of how the AIDS program could be improved. And it is worth mentioning that the newly enrolled one, that is for 2011, there's major focus now on mentoring because of the research did give us lessons where the mistakes were, where we fall short in terms of mentoring in the past, in almost all the HEIs. And after that research, HEIs have improved, one, on mentoring, that is for this cohort, and secondly, on the development of professional learning community practice or networks. Because through networks, principals can improve a lot. And the other point, which I think is worth mentioning, is that even at HEDCOM, this was discussed, but it's not enough just to say we'll be supporting the underperforming principals. But also it's a question of if people continue to underperform, it could be because of incapacity. It also could be because of non-compliance. And legislation is very clear, and it needs to be applied in this case. One, the PEM document is very clear on how to stupid that, and also the Educators Employment Act. I think that I can end there as far as this one is concerned. Then I'll request in that form.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. I'm going to respond on questions that relate to the Funza Lushaka bursary, as well as the one for offering foundation phase. The first issue on Funza Lushaka, a question was asked on whether Funza Lushaka bursaries are accessible to rural areas. We have been working on enhancing access. Since 2008, we've been implementing a strategy where we forward information to Tutong centers, to the provinces, to districts, and to schools. And in particular, when we look at schools, we targeted quintile 1 to 3 schools, where we know those are the ones that often don't have ready access to other media. So if there are still pockets where we are not reaching, we would appreciate the information and we'll try our best to disseminate the information to those areas. From the university report, however, I can report that since 2008, we compared 2008 to 2010 applications. They've indicated that in 2008, they received about 20,000 applications for first-year B.Ed., and by last year, they received over 70,000. So we would like to believe that the strategy is working. However, if there are still pockets that we're not reaching, we would like to work on covering those. The second question relates to whether foundation phase is offered by whom. There are currently two qualifications that lead to being qualified as a teacher.
the 1 year postgraduate certificate in education and the 4 year Bachelor of Education. For the 1 year PGCE, there are 5 universities, including universities of technology, that offer that qualification. And for the BEd, the 4 year BEd, there are currently 15 institutions, and the Department of Higher Education and Training is working on increasing that number to 18 by 2014. The last issue that I will respond to is the issue of placement of qualified Funza Lushaka Beza. The current condition indicates that once students qualify, they have to serve in a public school for the same number of years as they were funded. What we have tried to do is to emphasize deployment in quintile 1 to 3 schools, and the employment data that we have analyzed indicated that the majority of our qualified bursars are placed in quintile 1 to 3 schools, with over 65% of those being in such schools. However, it is something that we are working on improving to ensure that the graduates are actually deployed in areas where they are most needed. Thank you.
Chair, honorable members, thank you very much. Let me start by saying that maybe the reason why we take so much time to try and respond to some of these issues that have been legitimately raised by honorable members, that should highlight the difficulties of managing concurrent functions between national and provinces. I know that I'm making this statement to the right audience, because this is a select committee of the NCOP. And some people might be saying, we wouldn't have expected you to say that because you used to be in the province and you used to enjoy some of these things. So let me start with special schools and inclusive education. We're very excited as the department that this committee has placed the special schools and inclusive education at the center of your business. It's a matter of grave concern for our society and the society internationally. In fact, if we compare to other countries, we still have a lot to do. But can I also say that the department, through approaching National Treasury, introduced the intervention which was called Strengthening of Special Schools in 2006. The unfortunate bit is that the funding intervention comes through the equitable share. We know challenges around equitable share, what is expected at national and what happens in practice. So this program suffers, it continues to suffer the consequences and challenges of that, of battling for resources at provincial level. But the program is making an enormous difference. Unfortunately, before I left the Eastern Cape, I met with all special schools of the Eastern Cape, and we assessed progress of the implementation of this program. And unfortunately, I don't have the time. If I had the time, I would go through the presentation to show what impact the intervention has made in the Eastern Cape. Ifaka, for instance, was part of the schools that were supposed to have been upgraded, but which was shortchanged, unfortunately, by challenges around the administration of the Eastern Cape, as we all know. So I wouldn't want to get into that, but safe to say that we have a special intervention program for special schools. It's for the upgrading of the physical infrastructure. It provides assistive devices. It provides a whole lot of support, including training. Even computers. I mean, it was really heartwarming to learn that what has been the Cinderella of the system, for the first time, these schools are saying, at least we are provided, we also have computers, we are being trained, and our learners will also be trained to know how to use computers. I would respond to that in that manner. And then the issue of working with other stakeholders and other service providers such as NGOs, we welcome it 110%. There are many players in the terrain, and I'm sure for us to improve the conditions of special schools and these learners who are supposed to be benefiting from these schools, we have to work with everybody who is involved in the terrain. May I also indicate that maybe Braille is available in other languages. For instance, the workbooks that we are issuing out, we also issue them out in African languages. So it is available in other languages. It's not only in English and Afrikaans. We are also trying to give more attention to inclusive education broadly. And as I said, we are very excited. If the level of awareness is at this level, one cannot ask for more. I mean, this is almost the highest level of public representatives. Promotion of sign language. We've started a project which is the first of its kind, and I'm not saying this to blow our own horn. The development of a curriculum for South African Sign Language, which was never done before in this country. And we want this to be offered as a subject, not only in special schools, even in the mainstream schools, to afford all of us to assist in social cohesion, so that these members of society can also be actively engaged with all of us. So that honorable members will also be equipped with skills to engage with members of our society who cannot hear, who cannot speak. So we are developing a curriculum in that respect. CAPS training, we have trained as the department 336 foundation phase and 2,553 grade 10 district and provincial officials. The majority of districts trained, this training happened in March for CAPS. And the curriculum assessment policy statement, it's a strengthening of the curriculum, as I said in another committee the other time. It's not a new curriculum. It's merely to firm up the national curriculum statement. So in terms of readiness, we have trained. There were about three provinces that were still lagging behind. I'm sure the honorable member from Gauteng wouldn't like to hear this one. Gauteng is one of them. The leadership had taken a decision not to complete training for very good reasons, but training has started now. And before reopening next year, all teachers in grade 10 and grade 1 to grade 3 will be fully equipped to implement CAPS. KZN was one of them. We are working with KZN to make sure that they complete their training. Limpopo was also one of them. The branch head, Mrs. Kyobeka, has been working with the Limpopo province. So we are also going to assist there to make sure that come reopening of schools next year, all provinces are fully prepared to implement CAPS in grade 1, 2, 3, and grade 10. So effectively, it would respond to the question that says, are teachers equipped to implement CAPS? So we have that plan, which means that as I might need to indicate to you that for grade 1, 2, 3, and grade 10, implementation is 2012. For grade 4 to 6 and grade 11, implementation is in 2013. For grade 7 and 9 and grade 12, implementation is in 2014. So we prepare a year in advance before we reach the academic year. Technical high schools. And again, I would say that, consistent with the discussion that has taking place at the national parliament level to examine as to whether our education system broadly responds to the needs of the country, in particular to the 2.7 million to 3 million young people who are not in education and not even employed, the notion of need. We've started that discussion in the department quite extensively. And where we want to locate that discussion from, in terms of the academic pathway, we are of the view that it looks like there is no problem. The real challenge is around vocational pathway. As industry and ordinary members of the public will attest. And we are looking at strengthening of technical high schools to respond specifically to that need. Maybe there might be a need to reconsider the decision about GETC. There might be a need to do that. And I also want to bring in here the issue of schools of skills in the special education sector. So as we speak now, there's a team in the department that looks in that area. That there are learners with education barriers in special schools who cannot proceed beyond certain levels or grades of the system. So we need to find a way, either some recognition in the form of a qualification, and at the moment they just leave schooling by making use of their reports. And as we all know that the market wouldn't recognize this report. So we are looking at something that will really afford more absorption. We are convinced that inclusive education is for inclusive economy. It's a continuum in terms of the inclusive economy. So technical high schools, we are doing something. We have developed remedial measures together with the three provinces. Incidentally, Mpumalanga is out of the ICU, if we use that. Those three provinces that were mentioned there, the unfortunate bit is that provinces that were not in there, and Northwest is one of them, are now in the ICU.
Northwest,
it's one of them. The problem, honorable members, is really this thing that is indicated here as procurement is planning. The biggest challenge really is around planning. Because if you plan well, you must plan for procurement. You must plan for the extreme, for worse things to happen. So I'm saying what we have uncovered in this technical high school grant is that provinces did not plan well, and we are working with them, as the minister and the DG and the deputy minister instructed, that we must work with them to make sure that they optimally utilize the grant. The purpose of the grant is to upgrade the facilities. Two is to strengthen the sector to respond to the needs of the young people of the country. And that's what we want to use it for. The issue of catalogs, the influence of publishers and so on, will keep our eyes on the ground much more than what we have done, and make sure that, fortunately, the catalog process has now been centralized at national level for the first time, for grade 1 to grade 3 and grade 10. And that we have done this year. And provinces received catalogs on the 9th of September. Is it September?
October.
Yeah, 9th of October. So for next year, we intend to releasing the catalog for grade 4 to 6 as well as grade 11 much earlier, by June. Provinces should have the catalog so that they are able to procure. And for languages such as isiSwati, isiNdebele, you do have challenges around availability of books from publishers. So that's where our workbooks come in to bridge that gap. And so far we've been able to deal with that. And then promotion of other languages to deal with the dominance of English as 81%. I almost said, honorable members, in some way it's almost unavoidable, especially when you get into the intermediate phase. It's a transition from home language, which is mother tongue, to now LOLT, which is English. And therefore, I'm suggesting that the picture that you see here might not radically change. But the minister and the deputy minister have initiated a process of promoting African languages, offering them as first additional languages to non-African language speakers. That policy is still in the pipeline. When it's going to be released for implementation, we can only take our cue from the minister and the deputy minister. So we are saying for social cohesion, for promotion of the heritage in our country, the non-African language speaker must also be exposed to some extent for examination purposes to African language. So that policy is coming. And then the issue of progress on the rapid assessment of remedial, or on remediation. We have a program which is called the National Strategy for Learner Attainment. That program is doing exceptionally well. It's actually the key lever behind the improvement of the grade 12 results. We have now resolved meaning the department under the leadership of the ministry as well, in the light of what we have seen from the ANA results, we are extending the intervention to even the GET band. Not only to grade 12, but even to primary schools, to those schools that are lower than your FET band. So we are working on the framework which should be ready for implementation in 2013. And this has really produced phenomenal results. The issue of multi-grade schools. In terms of the CAPS, we are also attending to multi-grade schools, but there are other interventions of institutional development in the department that are also attending to multi-grade schools. The reason why the major focus is in the rural areas, the majority of these schools are in the rural areas. Sometimes, honorable members and the honorable member from Gauteng, we used to say the rural areas of Gauteng are some of the urban areas of some of the provinces. So I'm saying that we don't leave the schools that are dealing with challenges of multi-grades in Gauteng, but the greater focus is in those areas that are more in need, but also will make sure that we cover all areas. I'm sure the one of collaboration with Higher Education and Training, the acting DG, will deal with that, but safe to say that we sit in various committees that are trying to deal with all cross-cutting issues between higher education and training and basic education. I don't know, I thought that I covered that one. The one that was left out was about verification of training of teachers who are receiving training in conjunction with the ETDP CETA. Because we are not directly involved with that, we were of the view that it would be wise to get the actual data and then to transmit it accordingly, because this involves ETDP, CETA, and SAQUA. And we have the view that will provide a written response. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair and honorable members. There's only one question that is applicable to me, but before that, I would just want to add on the technical skills recapitalization. Although we withheld transfers to the three provinces, they had committed the funds, or they had spent on certain areas. For the current financial year, Treasury has approved rollovers to the provinces, so that won't affect the current allocations. And then there was a question on why the AG was not expressing an opinion on the annexures. As indicated on page 140, they did not audit the annexures. But we can't leave the annexes not completing them because they are a requirement. They're included in the template from National Treasury. So the department has to complete the annexes. Unfortunately, the Auditor General did not audit them. Thank you. To wrap up.
Quickly, Honorable Chair, on the issue of the scholar transport, there's a draft policy which is being finalized between the two departments. The ministers have requested the two DGs to finalize this matter. And the decision about where it resides between the two departments, it has been a function in basic education, but provincial executives have been taking decisions whether it should remain in transport or in education, but there are about three provinces that have already transferred the function. and the money will follow that. On the infrastructure, in 2010-11 was the sourcing of the funds and getting the go-ahead. In 2011 itself, we have appointed the Development Bank of South Africa to be the implementing agent to assist us in addressing the mud schools. And tenders have gone out, and contracts will be awarded between the 18th and the 21st of November. And construction will continue during the Christmas period as well, in order for us to have them finished before the 31st of March. And that's the 50 schools. With the water, sanitation, and electricity, we're working with Eskom, Imbula Trust, IDT, in order to complete those that have been identified as the projects. And to address the issue of where provinces have come in and done something, maybe put a classroom and not address the sanitation, our approach is to basically deal with everything when we replace the mud schools. There are 395 on the list, 50 in this current year, and in the next 2 years they need to be wiped out. We also have a guideline for planning for school infrastructure, which sets the specifications for the various types of classrooms and what's needed in different rooms, whether a laboratory and so forth, which is going to the Council of Education Ministers on the 18th. And when approved, this will then be given to provinces to utilize. But we are already using that in our planning in the 50 in the mud schools that we are involved in, as well as when we are constructing for any toilets and so forth. So I think that's on the infrastructure, which is a CD. On the ANA, basically, we've had systemic evaluation, which was assessments, but they were on a sample basis, which took maybe one grade in a particular year. So it's actually a continuation of what systemic evaluation is doing. So to just answer, it is being actually replaced by the annual national assessment, but it's basically on a larger scale, and we are covering grades 1 to 6, and in this year we had a pilot in grade 9, but the 2012 cohort will be involved in the writing itself. And in the results that we had, we had 100 schools per province, which the service provider, which was HSRC, did the verification, and that was the result that the minister released in June. We had information which we referred to the universal ANA for all the other schools. When we talk of 27,000 schools, there are actually 19,000 schools that have the grades 1 to 6 who took part in the test. So that data, we had about 60% of it captured, but the reliability of it was questionable. In fact, if you use that data, the performance is much better, but we believe that that would not give us an accurate picture. But each of the schools have got their results, which they needed to do an analysis of. But the department has gone with the minister and the deputy minister to schools and done its own analysis, which has shown some very serious issues, which Mr. Mweli referred to, which has required intervention. So in the next writing, there will be programs in place to assist schools in order for them to prepare for the test. So I think those are the questions. On the Eastern Cape disclaimer, the minister has put in place a team across the department which is assisting provinces in order for them to improve to an unqualified situation. And we've already been in the Eastern Cape thrice to work with the province. We cannot confidently say that there will be an improvement or not, but we're doing the team is working with the province and the colleagues in order to reverse the situation. And I think, Chair, on the issue of the Eastern Cape intervention itself, we'll provide a written response, and we'll also ask the minister that it may be advisable for her to come and brief the committee in person.
Thank you, DVC. I think we've exhausted the questions. Let me take this opportunity and thank the Department of Education for giving us this information, but not forgetting our concerns that we raised earlier before we started the meeting. The meeting is adjourned.
Members, stay behind for 5 minutes.
Thank you.